Well, the headlines this morning are out of Egypt, and so are the dramatic pictures of demonstrations in Alexandria and in Cairo, and calls for more demonstrations later on in the week. But it's a question posed globally, really, to the entire Arab world. In a sense, what or who is emerging to replace the political forces that are now under attack in the Arab world, from Tunisia straight through to Egypt.
And, you have to imagine, I mean, with with Hillary Clinton calling this massive meeting of all of her ambassadors, that's got to be her first question.
Indeed. Well, it's a question in Egypt where President Hosni Mubarak appointed Omar Suleiman, there's a new name, as the country's new vice president. Nobel laureate Mohamed El-Baradei has returned to his native Egypt and is claiming the role of opposition coalition leader. That coalition reportedly includes the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood. Or does it? And the opposition voice in the Arab world may be broader than what we're hearing simply in Egypt. Who's appealing to the young faces that from Tunisia all the way to Cairo and Alexandria are in the streets demanding political change? Our next guest joins us from Doha. Shadi Hamid is director of research at the Brookings Doha Center in Qatar. He's a fellow at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. Shadi Hamid, good morning.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You know, I just want to ask you right off the top, it seems to me that from Qatar and Doha, you're in a very unique position to view this sort of cleavage broadly in the Middle East. It's an emirate, Qatar, so in that sense, it's a very conservative place politically, yet it's also the center of media mass in the Arab world with Al Jazeera, which some have said has been driving these conflicts from Tunisia straight through to Cairo. What's it like being in Doha this week?
Well, it's certainly the case that Al Jazeera has been out in front of this story and have been a major source of news for Arabs around the region, but also even outside the Arab world with their English channel. So Al Jazeera got to some of these stories before other channels, especially during the Tunisian uprising, where a lot of people depended on Al Jazeera for most of the news they were getting.
Are the Emirates happy about all of this, or do they feel their governments are just as threatened as Hosni Mubarak?
There isn't much concern about that here in Qatar. Qatar has the highest GDP per capita in the world, so people are rich here, so there isn't the same kind of economic grievance. And Qatar is a very small country with only 250,000 people. Other Gulf countries, there is concern, and the leader of Saudi Arabia expressed support for the Egyptian president. Arab leaders throughout the region are watching this very closely. They're worried that this will spill into their own countries.
Indeed. Shadi Hamid is director of research at the Brookings Doha Center, reporting from Doha, Qatar this morning. Let's talk about the Muslim Brotherhood. Earlier, we talked about how the regime of Hosni Mubarak is what they're calling for to be toppled in the streets of Cairo and Alexandria and Suez. But there also appears to have been a bit of a changing of the guard in the opposition movement. Shadi appears to be gone from Doha. Is that right? Is that right? Well, you know, the other sort of issue there for Shadi Hamid is, as we watch the reporting in Al Jazeera, which is very much a cable channel consumed by the youth throughout the Arab world.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Sort of defining at least the sort of information channel, if not the message. And the Shadi Hamid there was saying that the other Gulf countries particularly are concerned about this spilling into their region, which explains the spike in oil prices and the concern short term for the oil markets, depending on what happens in Egypt.
You know, it's interesting looking at the way that Twitter and Facebook and Al Jazeera and other media outlets have played in not just the protests in Egypt, but in Tunisia and in Yemen as well. You have to wonder if maybe the person who will emerge to lead Egypt or any of these other countries will be the one who uses it the best. I mean, we'll have a second Obama kind of phenomenon where the person who uses the internet the best ends up leading Egypt.
Well, you had in the Tiananmen Square uprising in 1989 a time in sort of paleo media terms, way before Twitter, way before blogging, where you had emerging young faces who no one had ever seen, who became really enormous sort of protest figures in China, who then went on into the Western media to sort of profess what the agenda was politically in China. Yet that movement was suppressed, and a lot of those individuals are not remembered anymore. The question in the Arab world is, and we're looking at it, and Rashid Khalidi mentioned it at the top of the hour, the Muslim Brothers were not out in front here. They are a traditional opposition force in Egypt, and the traditional opposition force wasn't in the game. And so is there a turmoil in the traditional opposition in Egypt, just as there is an attack on the regime?
Well, let's ask our guest here, Raja Al-Thabani, a Yemeni American, BA student in human rights and international development. You were with us on Friday. You return again today. You heard us talking about the role that Al Jazeera and Twitter and Facebook are playing, and that has turned out to have a huge impact on what's going on in Yemen.
There is, yeah. I do have my friend over there right now. He is actually the founder of Hood Organization for Defending Rights and Freedoms. We will be talking to him in a little while. He did issue a few statements about, well, anti-government statements online on Facebook, and that led to one of his led to his arrest.
How recently was that?
And that was last week, right before he was arrested, before Thursday, before the protest started. So Facebook is a huge tool, Twitter, Al Jazeera, but there has been a lack of coverage in Yemen because the government has been censoring a lot of the news that has been coming in and
going out. We heard from Hamid in Doha that Qatar is completely stable because the people are rich there. It has the highest GDP in the world. In Yemen, it's probably the lowest GDP of any of the nations in the region. Is there any way the government can assuage the huge economic disparities in Yemen? That's an argument that everyone will go into the streets.
Yeah, well, that's the argument right now in the streets. Like, that's the problem that they're having, is that a lot of the people are being marginalized and neglected by the government, and they're just demanding the same thing that everybody else is demanding.
What's your biggest worry in your country of Yemen?
Because Yemen is very tribal, 35% of the country is actually run by central government only, and the other 65% is run by tribes, armed tribes that are autonomous and really have the law doesn't apply to them. So the danger is that even if they were to depose the government, you do have the issue of tribes and tribal leaders who are actually allies with the government.
And lots of old scores.
Yeah, so you do have so much. It's so much more complicated.
All right. The complexity inside Yemen as we contemplate what's going on in Egypt. Raja Al-Thabani is a Yemeni American and a student in human rights and international development here in the United States, watching, as so many of us are, the events in the Middle East.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.